You are now tuning in to another episode of Swinger Stories. I go by the name ASAP Hartwood. This is Chapter 13, BDSM Talk with Sir Judah. In this episode, I have a conversation with Sir Judah. He gives his insights on the BDSM world and so much more. If this is your first time tuning in to Swinger Stories, welcome. You can find my past episodes on Podomatic, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify. And if you have any questions for me, feel free to send me an email at asaphardwood710@gmail.com, or you can also find me on Twitter at asaphardwood710. Now that I got that out the way, let's hop into the phone conversation. Welcome back to another episode of Swinging Stories. I go by the name of ASAP Hardwood, and on the phone today we have Sir Judah. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, my brother. I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I appreciate you giving me some of your time up to be on the podcast today.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Now, I know you for a couple of years. You've always been a stand-up guy, real cool brother. And we kind of ran in the same circle where we attended a lot of the same parties. And after a while, I didn't notice you showing up to some of the parties. I was like, where's Judah at? They said, man, he's moved on to the BDSM world. So can you talk about how you got involved in the lifestyle and then what made you transition over to that?
Well, you know, for me, I got into the lifestyle. And there's a couple of lifestyles. I got into the swinging lifestyle. I had a buddy of mine who was going to a party in New York, Pennsylvania, years ago, probably 14 years ago. And he said, "Jude, man, how about you come on and go to this party with me?" So I'm thinking the party that he was talking about was a regular party. You know, just a regular house party, you got music and stuff like that. I didn't think anything of it from a lifestyle party per se. And I got to the party, and there were two wives there, and their husbands, and two other gentlemen there sitting. And I'm like, okay, this seemed like different because they in lingerie, and the guys them dressed up. And I'm wondering what's going on. And so my buddy was laughing because he saw this astonishment on my face, and he's like, man, calm down. They have the little get together. I invited you because I figured, you know, you're cool and you wouldn't go say anything and you're not gonna have their business out there like that. And I said, okay. And the rest was history after that. For me, and so how I got into transitioning to the BDSM lifestyle, and that for me, I've always been very disciplined, very structured, and the BDSM lifestyle for me offered much more than just play. It offered me an opportunity to start my chosen family. It gave me an opportunity for me to really dig deep into what makes relationships successful, what makes relationships that are out of the conventional style, what makes them successful. And so for me, the dom-sub relationship, I started out in the dom-sub relationship, and then I transitioned into master-slave relationship. Or in some BDSM circles might call it owner-property relationships, hierarchical relationships. And so that was the first lifestyle I've got into that there were classes on communication, classes on ecology of a relationship, how you deal with conflict resolutions, how you deal with mental health, how you deal with finances, how you deal with wills and estates. No other lifestyle was talking about that. And that blew my mind. And how connected these people were in when it comes to rules, protocols, when it came to the lifestyle from a perspective of everybody understood what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and how it needs to be done. It blew my mind, and so I've been in that ever since.
That sounds real interesting because, like, if you go to a, if you're like your first time going to a lifestyle party, going to a club, they might just say, hey, you know, no means no, here's the rooms, always wear protection, always, you know, ask different questions, but you don't really get a good in depth detail of what the lifestyle is about.
Very true. And so when you go to a BDSM club or a BDSM dungeon, as we call it, there are rules and regulations. Most of the dungeons will have the rules written on the wall when you come in. There's certain, like, if you go to a swinging lifestyle, engagement or a party, there's certain rules of engagement that you have to abide by. In the BDSM world, it's very different. Most BDSM clubs, years ago, you couldn't have sex at a BDSM club. Now, a lot of the clubs are changing. You could have full-blown penetration sex at a BDSM, and some of them. Some of them are still old school where no penetration, male penetrate the female. Now, you might be able to penetrate her with a toy, penetrate her with something else, your hand, but you can't just slide your dick in, you know, and things like that. And so that is changing a little bit because we're now having a merging of the different lifestyles, swinging, BDSM, you got the hot wife lifestyle, you got the queen of spades lifestyle, you have the stack vixen lifestyle, you have the hedonist, you have the fetishist, you have the kinksters. So you have all these different lifestyles under the umbrella that we call non-conventional relationships, non-conventional lifestyles, or alternative lifestyles, some people call it. So they are very different. I would advise people, if you're interested in certain types of lifestyles or interested in it or it piques your interest, research, ask questions about it. Don't assume because, let's say, you come from a swinging world and you're going into a BDSM lifestyle that you can just go into a club and start smacking some woman on the ass. You might get knocked the hell out. You know what I mean? So it's very different. Very different. Yeah. The rules of engagement are very different.
Because when I was reading up a little bit about BDSM, I was learning that it's not really about the sex. It's about the power and the control of everything. You did mention a dom and a master. What's the major difference between those two?
Well, for a dominant control is given authority, or you might hear two terms. You might hear some people say power exchange, or you might hear some people say authority transfer. I prefer to use authority transfer because, in theory, the sub or the slave is transferring the authority that she has over herself over to the dominant or the master. Basically saying, because of the trust that I place in you, because of the time that we've spent, because of the structure, because of the protocol, because of how safe I feel with you, I believe you having authority over me will help me to become the best version of myself that I can be. Because you're giving me discipline, you're giving me encouragement, you're giving me rules, you're empowering me, you're allowing me to be who I really am without fear, without being ashamed, without being judged or ridiculed. And at the same time, I understand there's the love, care, and love that's attached to that. And so having that authority over me helps me to be the best version of me. Now, the difference between a dominant and a master is basically one thing. The amount of authority that has been given to them. A dominant is in charge of or is leading a relationship that a submissive gives that dominant X amount of authority over life. For example, she might say, you have authority over my finances, you have authority over where I go, you have authority over my body, meaning I can't shake my pussy if I want to unless I ask you, I can't touch my tits and rub my ass, my pussy and play with myself unless I ask you permission, because that's yours. You have authority over that. A slave now gives total authority. So she says, you have total authority over me. Finances, where I go, what I eat, where I sleep, what time I get up. You have that. I'm giving you the authority to do whatever you feel necessary to help me become the best version of myself. And in turn, you help our relationship to be successful because it's a symbiotic relationship. You're getting something out of it while you're depositing something in it. So, hopefully that answers your question. Simplest terms.
No, it definitely did help me. So, like, when I looked up the word BDSM, it said it's basically an acronym for So if we go through each one, so B says it stands for bondage.
Yes.
What are you into? Are you into the blindfolds, handcuffs, or what area are you into as far as bondage?
In terms of bondage, my style is mainly you have people do rope bondage, what they call rope tops or riggers. You'll hear them those terms used. I'm more in bondage. I'm not so much into the rigging. I use more restraint. So I might use a restraint harness. I might use rope tied up to the chair. I might use an under the bed restraint. Zip tie sometimes. Depending on how I'm feeling, depending on whoever I'm playing on, engaging in that activity with, knowing their pressure points, knowing their skin, if their skin is sensitive to certain things, how tight to tie it, and I've cut their circulation off. There's a lot of things that go into, a lot of education that go into that, without you just going to start tying somebody up and doing things to them when it comes to bondage. D stands for dominance. Basically, dominance is mainly, and more the dominance has come from a mind thing. It's more so from a mental perspective. Dominating that person in their mind. Because if you can dominate a person too mentally, you have the body will follow. You catch the mind, the body will follow. So you dominate them mentally, the body just falls into subjection to you. To the point where when they hear your voice, her pussy get wet.
Hmm.
You know, when she hears your voice, she gets excited. Her body reacts to that because you have trained her mind. You know, I had a slave and a submissive at one point where I would tell her, you need to come right now. Right now. And that she would come on command. Okay? And because I've trained her to do that, to come on command or squirt on command. Right? Why? Because I've trained her mind to understand when you hear this word come, you are now understanding because of the authority that I have over you, because the authority that I have over that over your body, you are now, your mind, your body is going to react to the point where master says come, so I have to come because I am given a directive and I need to follow that directive. F and M. Sadomasochism is a bunch. You can look at sadomasochism from two perspectives. Sadism is pretty much anybody who gets intense sensations off of any type of stimuli. Okay? So you might have someone who's, let's say they, you tie them up and you tickle them and the sensation is so intense that they come from just the tickling. Okay? You have another perspective where you have sadism to a point where some people, they like to be given spankings or whips or flogging. And they like to be flogged in a way that it causes pain or intense sensation. I try not to use the word pain because when you say the word pain, pain has a negative connotation. I prefer to use the word intense sensation. When you flog somebody, you can flog two ways. You can flog them to the point where you'll use your heavy-handed where you actually bruise the skin to the point where it causes pain or intense sensation that they get your euphoric feeling from. Okay? It gets them off. Okay? Some people like that. Okay? So when those who like intense sensations, you call them, those are called masochists. Masochism is the activity to bring that about. Sadism is the one who inflicts those on somebody. So for me, I have sadistic tendencies where I like inflicting intense sensation on people. It gets me off when I do that. It gets my dick hard. It gets me excited when I see somebody who's crying, who is can't take it no more, and and they're enjoying that. That makes me get excited. That makes me Okay. So that's BDSM.
Okay, if you're meeting somebody new and they want you to spank them and flog them, I know safe words is a big factor, but have you ever worried, like, I'm going to hurt this person, or what is your concerns on doing that for somebody for the first time?
Well, you know, before you do that to somebody for the first time, you have to have conversations with them. You have to know any health issues that's going on. Let's say I'm going to spank somebody. I got to figure out and have conversations with them on how they want to be spanked. Do you want to be spanked standing up? Do you want to be spanked bent over a chair, bent over the bed, bent over a spanking bench? Well, what best method of spanking gets you off? Okay? So that's the first thing. We talk about negotiating. You got to negotiate. It's called negotiating a scene. So you would negotiate the scene where you first let the person know what your hard limits are or your soft limits. So she might say, listen, you can spank me, but I don't want to leave no bruises. Because bruising is a hard limit for me. You can spank me, but I don't want you touching my pussy while you're down there spanking. Don't stick nothing in my pussy. Don't stick your dick near me. I don't want none of that. That's all I need is for you to come and spank. What do you want to be spanked with? You want to be spanked with my hand? You want to be spanked with a cane? You want to be spanked with a paddle? You want to be spanked with a riding crop? What do you want to be spanked with? What gets you off? What implements give you the best opportunity to reach a euphoric feeling? So you have these conversations because in BDSM, one of the main things that governs our lifestyle is a word called consent. Unless they consent to that. And consenting means that just like in healthcare, you have a word called informed consent. Before a doctor or any medical professional does anything to anybody, they have to go through what we call an informed consent conversation with that patient. Let them know what are the risks that is involved in this procedure that might be going on. What are the positives and negatives, healing process, and things like that. It's the same similar thing you have to do in BDSM. Because in most states in the United States, BDSM activity is considered abuse. Mm. So if you were to go and spank some, just meet a girl online and y'all struck up a friendship and she wants to, you spank her, she gets mad at you because, you know, she wants to be your boyfriend and, you know, she wants you to be her boyfriend, and you, after that session, you said, no, I'm not into that. I just had a good time. I just want to leave it at that. And she gets mad at you. She can call the cops. And if you bruise her, now she takes pictures, send it to the police, go to the police station, and they document all these bruises on you. And then you tell the cop that, yeah, I did. We did have a spanking session. She wanted to get the cops. She said, no, he did not do that. We did not consent to that. He beat me. You can go to jail.
Wow.
So it's not as simple as just picking up and having fun with people. Your freedom can be at risk if you're not careful, if you're not really diligent in what you're doing and the people that you're engaging in these activities with. You can lose your freedom and lose a lot of things.
Now, how does one go about, like, I know FetLife seems to be a real popular website, but if you're interested in getting into the BDSM world, how do you go about going to find out where parties are and different things like that?
Well, right now, most BDSM clubs, BDSM dungeons, are closed because of COVID.
Okay.
So a lot of the activities are pretty much online. And the BDSM scene is very active with Zoom calls, Zoom meetings, things like that. That would be, I would say, the first thing to do is look at FetLife. Join FetLife. See what activities are going on in your area. The DMV is a hotbed for BDSM when it comes to the POC, the people of color community. It's the largest group of people of color that engage in the activity, to the point where most of the largest BDSM conferences in the country, I would say at least 6 out of 10 of them happen in the DMV. Okay? And so, if you're in the DMV, you have no reason, if you're involved in, if you're interested in BDSM, you have no excuse for education, because there's many groups, many Fat Life has a lot of groups that will give you education. There are books that you can read. S&M 101 by Guy Baldwin is a good book. You have other books. I can't remember. There's another one called Screw the Rose, Give Me the Thorns. That's a good book. And you have another one called... I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. They're Loving Dominant. That's a good book. Playing Well with Others. You can find most of these books on Amazon. Playing Well with Others, The New Bottoming, The New Topping. Those are books that you can find on Amazon. And you can read through those. There's a website called submissiveguy.com. You can go, if you feel like you're submissive, whether male or female, because submissives are not just females, they're males. You have males who identify as submissive, males who identify as slaves as well. It's not just submissive females alone. So, you know, if you love giving over authority to somebody, if you love service, if you love and enjoy having somebody take control, you're a slave or you're submissive. If you enjoy dominating, if you enjoy teaching, you enjoy guiding a relationship, you more than likely might be a dominant or a master.
And that's one thing I read. They gave two scenarios. You could take a CEO, a lady that's in charge. She's real hardcore at work, but at home she's submissive. Or you could take somebody that's a motorcycle leader, hard, you think rough and tough, but at home he's submissive. Can you go back and talk about the Zoom meetings? How does that work out? How does that look? You said.
Well, more than likely, what tends to happen is you go to Fat Life, or you can Google BDSM groups in my area. You can even Google that, and it will pop up. It gives you, you know, places in your area that you can go and you can engage in, and. What they will do, they will depend on the topic that you might want. So you might have a topic called negotiating or consent. And you can, those Zoom calls where people are talking about consent, people are talking about what it means to be a slave, what it means to be a submissive, polyamory, leather households, what it means to be in a leather family, what the leather lifestyle is about. You know, there's multiple resources available for people who are interested in learning and growing. So the Zoom call is basically about anything that you're interested in that they have available. I just did a Zoom call with MTTA, which is a big group here in the DMV area. I just did one on February 6th, and my presentation was on leadership. And so they had other people on that. It was from 12 till 6. So every hour, it was a new presenter every hour. So there were topics, ran the gamut from abandonment, issues, people who have disabilities, people, finances, negotiate how you deal with stress in your relationship, how you deal with somebody who has PTSD, somebody who has bipolar disorder. How do you navigate a relationship with somebody who's challenged with those illnesses? Things like that. You know, you don't hear too many people talk about those kind of conversations. Because it's not sexy.
Right.
It's not, it's not something that we like talking about. but it exists in our culture. It exists in our relationship. And we have to tackle those head on. You know, we can't run from it. And with COVID and the pandemic, there's a lot of people who are out here struggling mentally and emotionally, because you have people who their love language, one of their love languages is meaningful touch. And they can't be out, they can't meet, see their loved ones or see their love because they are prone to get the virus easily, or they have low immune, the immune system is very weak, so they can't be predisposed to catch that, and so they don't want to, you know, bring these loved ones into an environment where they can catch it, and then they're responsible for that. So they suffer from that because they want to be touched, they want to be loved, they want to be out here laughing, talking, going to events, and just socializing. You know, how do you deal with a person like that? That's struggling in the house 24/7. You know, and they can't go to work because they're working remotely, and they can't see dad, they can't see mom, they can't see their boyfriend, they can't see girlfriend, they can't see their lovers. You know, it's very hard. It's very difficult. And these are conversations we need to have.
Yeah, that's definitely challenging. Like you said, you're cooped up in the house, and like, if you have a loved one, either, you know, family members or, like, significant other, and you can't have that physical touch or that, you know, just, it can play with a lot of, and your mental issues can build up really easy.
Very true.
So, you see on the TV and, like, movies, you get a glimpse of, like, dungeons and dungeon play. How does that look in the real world?
In the real world, you know, every dungeon is going to look different. Most dungeons going to have what we call a St. Andrew's cross. It looks like a big X, right? Most dungeons are going to have a spanking bench. They're going to have areas where, you know, your bathroom, areas where people can sit and watch a scene. They're going to have areas where, for different types of BDSM play. Whether they have a wide area where people can throw whips, they might have an area where people can do fire play, they might have an area where people can do wax play, area where people are doing medical play, where people do needles, people are doing scarification, where they actually use a knife and use, you know, cut. Artistic cutting, they call it, where you might have a tattoo that you might think of, and somebody, instead of using a tattoo needle to get that image on your skin, they use a knife to cut that image into your skin. Mm. Some people like that. They have areas where, you know, you can wrestle. Some people identify as primals, so they like wrestling. So it depends. It varies from dungeon to dungeon. We are very fortunate in the DMV at the Baltimore Playhouse, because the Baltimore Playhouse is the largest dungeon on the East Coast. The largest dungeon. So we are very fortunate to have that. You have the Crucible in D.C. You have Rose Lane, which is, I think now it's called Studio 58, in Frederick, Maryland. So there's a few dungeons that we have in the area. That we can attend for classes and attend for play and just attend for socializing, you know, and just being around like-minded people.
Now, what is your current situation? Do you have any, slaves or, I'm not sure what the right word is to say.
Okay, well, for me, I'm what you call a poly master.
Okay.
I'm polyamory. I've been with them, Keisha and Malika. They've been with me for, Malika's been with me going on 4 years. Keisha has been with me for 3 years. And they are two. I have one other slave that I'm getting to know, and kind of we get to know each other to see if we're a good fit before we go into a contractual agreement that we're going to be master slaves. So that's pretty much it for me in terms of that. So that's my relationship structure, pretty much.
Now, when you say contract, is that like an actual written contract?
Well, the contract is basically, it is written. However, a BDSM contract is not legally binding in the state of in the United States. It's not legally binding. However, what it is for us is legally binding for us. It's basically standard protocols that govern our relationship. So, for example, the contract might say, at 7:30 every morning, Monday through Friday, master needs to hear from his slave on how she's doing. So by 7:30 every morning, I need to get a text from her. Basically say, master, I'm well, or sir, I'm well, or king, or whatever honorific day we negotiate or agree that they would address me as. I need to hear from them. One of my protocols in my house is that you eating correctly, exercise, financial freedom. Those are the things that I implement. So the contract would have all those different categories in it, and she has to abide by those, or she can't say, well, listen, this contract, I don't like this contract, it don't work for me, these things. And then we can walk away from the table like, okay, this doesn't work for you, this doesn't work for me, let's leave it where it is, and we can look for other people that best suit and best fit what we're looking for.
So do these other women, do they all interact with each other?
No, my two slaves don't interact with each other sexually. They interact with each other. We all have, in the mornings, we'll have our FaceTime that we talk in the mornings and just check up on each other, see how each other's doing. And just basically interacting and making sure that we all are well. And all is well in everybody's world. But they don't. They're not sexually involved with each other. No.
Okay.
And that's not a requirement for me. I don't need that. I don't need them to be sexually involved.
Now, how did you meet them? At a party or just through online?
One I met at an event, at the Baltimore Playhouse. And the other one, I met her. I've known her before. We met in this swinging lifestyle when she was with another partner. And we kind of lost touch, and when her and the other partner broke up, she was in another relationship with another gentleman, and when that relationship ended, she came looking for me. So she didn't, my number had changed, and she didn't realize my number had changed, and so at that time, the only thing she had to reach in contact with me was my email address that we used to use. And the rest is history after that.
Now, are you open with your family about what you do?
Some family members know, those that are dear and close to me. Others that I have a loosely connected relationship with, no. And that's one of the things that I tell people too. Everybody don't need to, you don't have to justify your relationship to everybody.
Right.
Everybody does not need to know what you do. Sometimes it's best that everybody not know what you do, because it can cause a whole lot of rip. If you're not secure in your relationship, and if you're not secure in who you are, that can cause a lot of stress on an individual. And some people cannot handle that level of stress. So I always suggest to people, if you cannot handle that, don't go around telling everybody your business.
And I always think, like, why does your brother or sister need to know that you're hooking up with other people? Like, your brother doesn't tell you about his relationship with his wife or his girlfriend.
Right. So there's no need for me to go into, into details about my life. If I feel like they need to know, I'll let them know. Like my cousin in Richmond, we have always been very close. And so I tell him, because if he comes up to see me in Newport News and there's a situation where the girls are there, I want him to understand, well, hey, these are the girls, so he's not looking at me weird like, hey, what happened? Why you got these two girls half naked in here?
Right.
You know what I mean? Or, whatever the case is. Or, why are these two girls are here? at least he need to know, hey, this is how I live, and that's it. But everybody does not need to know that. Even on my job, they don't. I keep my work life and my personal life very separate, because at the end of the day, you got to be careful with that. Again, you know, a lot of jobs have clauses in their contracts on how you live, and if they feel like your lifestyle is going to be a distraction or make their organization look negative in the public eye, you know, you can lose your job. So why am I going to bring them involved in my love life and how I live? They don't need that. What they need from me is that when I come to work, I do a job in an excellent manner, and that's all they need from me. How I live and what my relationship structure looks outside of work, they don't care about that. They don't care about that. That is none of their business.
Exactly. None of their business. A few years ago, you know, 50 Shades of Grey came out. You had church members and school teachers all running up to go watch the movie. What was your take on that movie?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you ask that, because that's the first thing everybody asked me. Oh, you and BDSM, so you're kind of 50 Shades of Grey stuff. And in one way, it opened the door for discussion on BDSM. It opened the door for people to really talk and have open dialogue on the BDSM lifestyle. What it also showed was how many people in the United States and across the world, how many women were open and kinky and had these desires but were afraid to express them. They were afraid to tell anybody about it because, again, they knew they were going to be judged, they were going to be ostracized, they're going to be called crazy, they're going to be called all kind of names. And so people don't want to be ostracized. People don't want to be treated different. So they're going to shut down. They're not going to tell people how they really feel. If a woman out here, there's a lot of women out here who like to be choked, like to be spanked, like their head pulled, like to be called a nasty, dirty slut, like to be called a nasty, dirty bitch. And they're not going to tell people that, because they feel, if I tell people that, they're going to look at me differently. They're going to think I'm crazy. They're going to think something wrong with me. I've heard girl women have said this to me on a couple of occasions. I like being choked during sex, but I've asked some of my past lovers to do it, and they look at me crazy. Or tell me, you need your head examined. You need counseling. You need this. You need that. And so what you think, when a woman hears that 2 or 3 times, you think she's going to keep telling people that? No, she's going to shut down. She's like, no, I'm going to keep that secret. You know, I'm going to keep that secret. And so what 50 Shades of Grey did was allow people to have at least open conversation. It really is not theoretically how the BDSM traditionally goes in terms of, because what they portrayed was a dom-sub relationship. What 50 Shades of Grey was. Grey was the dominant, and she was the submissive. Theoretically, from my perspective, they were more top-bottom. She gave him authority over her in the bedroom, right? But outside of the bedroom, he really didn't have protocols. They really didn't have anything that really governed how they really interacted in their relationship. He wasn't really dominating her totally. He was dominating her in the bedroom. That was basically it. And so that brings into the question the issue of top and bottom. What's different between a top and a dominant? A top and a dominant is a dominant controls a relationship, or is in authority or leading a relationship. A top is leading a scene. So somebody can be a submissive or bottom, and she said, look, okay, Judah, I'm going to give you authority over me for this scene. After that, I don't have no authority over her. I can't tell her to do anything else. But during that scene that we negotiated from, let's say, by 8 o'clock, from 8 to 9, we're going to play, you have total authority over me, or you have partial authority over me in these guidelines and these boundaries. After that, when the scene is over and I leave, you have no more authority over me. That's a top-bottom relationship.
So basically, a scene could be also just like, in other words, like a role play?
Yeah.
So it sounds like BDSM was a dirty word, and then when 50 Shades came along, people started talking about it, and more people started to be more vocal to their partners or their own loved ones.
Yes, yes. BDSM made it easier for people to open up a little bit more about what their needs and their wants were. And it gave us, as people in the BDSM community, an opportunity that we were not looked at as degenerate. We were not looked at as deviant. We were seen as, oh, this is everyday thing. You know, because it took the stigma out of it.
Right.
It took the shame out of it. It took the, you know, the dirty thing that people, all of you to whips and chains. I thought, no. There's many people in BDSM who never use no whips or chains. Okay? So it opened the conversation for us to have about what really is going on in the bedrooms in America. Right? What are some of the structures? And like you said it so eloquently, there were school teachers, people who worked at churches, grandmas are out here watching 50 Shades of Grey. And actually, the book was better than the movie.
And actually,
you had more people reading the book than who went to the movie. So, and those who didn't read the book were a lot of the people who went to the movie theater because they heard about the book, so they said, I just want to read the book. Let me go watch the movie and see what it is. And so, that's what really is going on. It really gave people an opportunity to really have conversations about what was really going on.
Now, earlier you mentioned that, especially in the DMV area, there's a lot of people of color into that. Could you see a movie starring like black people in that role?
You know, there's actually low-budget films where you see a little bit of people of color, black and Latino, people that are in small little roles that are doing a lot of light BDSM. You have a lot of BDSM groups in the DMV that they will bring, they will have little get-togethers at people's homes or at hotels and stuff like that, or rent out a house. And they would have somebody come in and they would do little BDSM scenes where they would do that. I've been invited to do some flogging scenes, some wax play scenes, and also to talk about BDSM in, from the role of a dominant and from the role of a master. Because I started out in the BDSM scene as a dominant, and I moved into the mastery position. I knew I always was a master, but I knew, for me to be able to handle full control, I got to be able to first handle partial control. And so that's what it is. But you're going to see that. You, sooner or later, you're going to see black people doing, or Latinos doing the black or the Latino version of 50 Shades of Grey.
So in the swinger community, or like for the main clubs and parties, they shy away from like homosexuality. Is that big in the BDSM world, or is that welcome?
Yes. In the BDSM community, actually, the BDSM community has a very large gay men population, very large, especially in the leather community. The gay leather men started the leather community in a lot of ways. And so the LGBT community in the BDSM community is the largest group in the BDSM community, the LGBTQ community. They are the largest groups in terms of BDSM. There's other groups that are part of it that are, I'm part of a group called MDHL, Male Dominant Heterosexual Leather Submissive and Slaves. And there's a couple of chapters around the country. It started in LA and then it moved to the DMV. There's one chapter in Texas, and I think there's a chapter somewhere else. But the DMV chapter is the largest chapter in the country of MDHL. We're the largest chapter. I think there's not too many people in the LA chapter. There's not too many. Most of those guys have died off, and and the newer generation is more doing other things. So the DMV chapter is the largest. But when it comes to BDSM, the leather, the gay leather men have paved the way for a lot of things that has taken place in BDSM. And so it's nothing for you to go into a dungeon and see gay men, gay women, trans. And so if you're a person who is homophobic or you don't want to be around that, that's not a, I would suggest you not do it. You not go there because you're going to be, have your face pushed up and judging and just have an attitude. And that's not the place, because in BDSM, we want everybody to be safe and be everybody to be themselves. It's a safe space for everyone.
Okay.
I'm a straight man, and I've been in dungeons with gay men and all that. I say, hey, how you doing? And I keep it moving. I don't engage in bi or bi men or gay men or gay male activity. It's not my thing, but that because it's not mine, don't mean that I need to shame them or shame lesbians or shame bi, you know, people who are bi, people who are heteroflexible, people who are homoflexible, people who are pansexual. You know what I mean? No. I look at them as we are all in the same space, supporting each other and enjoying ourselves and how we love and how we express ourselves. And that's all I look at it as.
Now, just going back to one movie that touched on that kind of, are you familiar with Pulp Fiction?
Yes, Pulp Fiction.
When they went into the little pawn shop and that guy, when he got a Ving Rhames, he was like, I'm pretty fucking far from being okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you look at the other thing, one of the movies that before 50 Shades of Grey came out, there's a movie called The Secretary.
Okay.
Okay. That was pretty much started at the BDSM. So people think that 50 Shades of Grey was one of the first BDSM movie. No, no. There were The Story of O. There's also, you can Google it, or you can even pull it up on YouTube, The Secretary, and you can see it. That has a lot of BDSM connotations in it, because he had her so mentally controlled that even after he left, that she was still doing what he told her to do. She didn't move from what he told her not to do. So, very powerful movie. Very powerful movie. The Secretary.
Cool. It's a lot of good things you dropped, information-wise. Is there anything else you would like to add?
The only thing I would like to add, I would say this. We're living in a time where we as people of color, everybody around the world, be who you are. Just be who you are. You don't have to lie to anybody about who you are. If you love something, you're engaging in something, there are people out here who are going to support you, who are going to be here to give you what you need. Don't hide. Don't feel shamed. Don't feel like, you know, nobody going to understand. No, there are people out here who will support you and who will be in your corner and who is going to be there for you. You just got to find your people, so to speak. You just got to find them. And hopefully the information that I gave tonight will start a catalyst for some people to be able to say, you know what, Judah made a good point. I'm going to start researching. I'm going to start looking up. And if anybody's going on Fat Life and they're joining, they want somebody to talk to, they can hit my profile up. It's Sir Judah, Sir with two R's, S-I-R-R, Judah, J-U-D-A-H. They can just send me a message. Sir Judah, I heard you on the podcast. I just want to reach out to you. Thank you. Whatever you want to say. I'm here for it.
Cool. All
right. I want to support the people. I was in a community where people embraced me and supported me, and I want to do that for other people.
Yeah, that would definitely be very helpful, like just to guide people in the right way, give them some information where they can look at it and, you know, just take it and read it and make their own judgment about it.
Very true. Very true.
All right, before I let you go, I got a pair of dice in my hand. I'm going to roll it and see what number I land on, and just going to ask you random questions. All right, you landed on five. All right, so number one, what is your favorite item to spank someone with?
My hand.
Okay. What misconception about the BDSM world would you like to clear up?
The misconception is that all we do is just beat people, and it's all about pain, and it's about whips and chains, and it's about just debauchery and orgies. No, it's not that. Not that at all.
Any BDSM pet peeves?
That's a good question. One of the pet peeves I hate is when you come into a dungeon and I'm doing a scene and people over there laughing and making all kind of noise and distracting me because I'm in a headspace. My bottom is in a headspace, and they're just pretty much fucking up the scene, fucking up the vibe. That's my pet peeve.
What qualities do you look for in a partner?
For me, I look for reliability, consistency, someone who is emotionally and mentally healthy, somebody who is financially healthy, somebody who is a giver, somebody who is affectionate, somebody who has gifts, talents, and abilities that I can use in my house, in my house, in terms of my poly household, and somebody who is hospitable, and somebody who is going to look at me and want to be able to look at my journey and say, listen, I want to come in and I want to be able to help you reach your full potential. Those are the qualities I look for.
And the last one, do you have any kinks?
My kinks? Yeah. Of course I have kinks. I'm in BDSM. Of course
so
I have kinks.
What is your top kinks?
My top kinks is ass. I love a nice ass.
Nice ass.
I love a nice ass. I'm an island man. I'm from the Caribbean. I love ass. You know, so you got a nice ass. Oh, yeah, I like, ooh, that's why I like spanking, because with my head, because I like spank that ass.
Very nice.
You know?
Well, I appreciate your time, Sir Judah. Thank you for coming on.
Not a problem, my brother. Not a problem. Anytime. You know I'm here for it. I like to educate our people, educate the masses, and anything I can do to help you and help our people to be better, to love stronger, to be more committed, to be more help, to be healthy in every aspect of our lives, brother, I'm going to do it.
All right, signing off for Swinger Stories. This is ASAP Hardwood, and remember, everybody has a Swinger Story. What's yours? ASAP.